I read a series of papers on energy efficiency solutions and research for data centers, and that's pretty much what I'm going to present today, plus some readings and algorithms and energy efficient algorithms. So that's pretty much the topics we're going to go over. First, we're going to see the requirements for a data center, because those are important things that we need to consider when creating solutions, energy efficient solutions for data centers. Then quickly we'll go over the need for energy efficiency. We really don't need to go into too much detail on that. And then most of the presentation is going to be a survey of research on energy efficient solutions and challenges. We're going to first go over fundamental approaches, like the different, like all different solutions can be put in a different kind of a field of approaches. And after that, we're going to go quickly over energy efficient algorithms and research on that. And then we're going to go over three of the papers that I read. One was JIRA, the SRC map developed JIRA at FAU in India, and RABBIT, that's the name. And then at the end, one of the other papers that I read didn't apply power down mechanisms. It kind of concentrated on slowing the performance and power of the system. And we're also going to go over that as the last one, but that's actually the most recent research that I went over. So the requirements for the data center is, I guess it can be simplified into three of these. One is reliability. It needs to be reliable no matter what data layout or things we make to make it energy efficient. And of course that implies that we cannot have a single point of failure, which makes us, gives us the need to create a replica for each piece of data. Also, a system always needs to provide availability for all the data. I guess all the data either needs to be available all the time, and if it's not available, it at least must provide a small downtime for it. And that, of course, gives us the need for redundancy in case of one. But also, redundancy because of the system needs to be tolerant. And one server goes down, it needs to be able to get the data that goes down. And also in a system needs to be serviceable, meaning that we are in a large data center, we're going to need to replace parts and fix different servers and so on. So we should be able to keep the system going through the local operation, which means taking snapshots, saving data, and, different techniques.
Just to clarify, you're focusing on storage, as opposed to anything else in the data center.
Yes, I'm pretty much concentrating on the energy efficient algorithms for data storage, pretty much.
Because all of these requirements are also applied to other infrastructure. Right. Your servers, your computation, maybe your power system, your backup system, generators. In the overall view of data center requirements, this is just one part.
Right. Well, so quickly, we really need to do research on energy efficiency, because it's estimated that over 100 billion kilowatts of energy are being used per year on energy efficiency, and it's been found that most of it is actually getting wasted. Being wasted, so there's a large push right now for research on energy for power and data centers. So these are the four basic categories in which all the research on energy efficiency for data centers is being organized. The first one is the use of less redundancy. In this way, I guess we can decrease the amount of data storage that we have. If we decrease the amount of storage that we use, then of course we can use less energy in that storage. When it's coming less space, it's a different way of also decreasing the amount of data that you have to store. Squeeze more data into available space, or also in the process of some approach, you want to store the least amount of data that you can, so you can spend the least amount of energy you can. I guess you have the proportional relationship.
Right. Makes sense to the relationship. Mario, for 2 and 3, I think a little bit of clarification. Commit less space just means how much do you overprovision. You can overprovision less, or you can overprovision.
Yes.
We need more data for these techniques like compression.
Yes, we're going to go over in more detail over
compression or consolidation?
Compression.
you commit less space in the other system.
Well, we're going to go into more detail in each one of these strategies. And the last one we're going to go over, and that's the one we're going to consider the most from my different power efficient. Actually, more of the most of the papers that I read from research done on that strategy. So the first strategy used to go quickly over the use of less redundancy. Most of the research done concentrates on rate. Rate one, it's good because it helps provide the loss of at least one device. I guess not as good as other approaches, but other approaches like rate 5, 4, and 3 cannot tolerate as many failures as one, but they require less device drives because it's much less expensive and requires less energy, and sometimes it's bound to be worth the danger of having less capacity to respond to failures than rate 1. Well, I kind of, all this information, I did it based on the papers that I read. I didn't use much information outside the sources that I used. And they don't mention rate 2.
Yeah, rate 2 is, I think, it's not used at all. Even rate 3 is not used at all. People could use rate 4.
For whatever
even that is not reliable enough for use in enterprise systems. So rate, what we are essentially looking at is rate 5,
1,
1 6, and maybe 0 in combination of anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, 2, 3, 4 are in the
other thing in there is that fun and rate 6, fun work out roughly the same as rate 5.
Yeah, I'm gonna go over that. And higher rates, higher rate 6, it provides better availability. So we have data is organized. It can provide lots of two devices. Mathematically, for their calculations, the economic recovery is going to have five on rate 1. But you don't end up spending as much power as in rate 5 or rate 1. With power. I mean, it's more secure, but you don't end up spending much more power to be able to make it more secure. So it makes sense. And your approach is the use of both snapshots. It's pretty much point-and-time copies. So you want to copy the data that is different. You don't need to do complete duplicated copies of the data. Strategy 2 is the approach of committing the state. For what around the papers, one of the solutions that are reviewed is the use of new provisions. And pretty much you try not to over allocate space for the data. And strategy 2.
So, you go back? Yeah. So, there is one technique that some people use that's called short stroking, which is that you essentially have twice what you need. For instance, the disk, you have, you require, let's say, 100 gigabytes, and you buy 200 gigabytes of storage. And then you only use half so that you limit the movement of the arm, and thus it's fast. Right? So, you're actually overcommitting, but it's to. You're overcommitting because you need that performance that gives you more resources.
Yeah,
but that's not what you're considering here, right?
Right, but I guess that also falls into a trade-off that you do between performance and power, right? It depends if you want the system to be really fast and
there are other techniques, though. I haven't sent you this recent paper that one I wrote.
Yeah, I guess I'd like to read all that information. Ali wasn't on the material that I used for this presentation.
Yeah.
They only talk about things provision.
Yeah.
I guess I should have gone over all
other
stuff.
It's fine. I mean, you need to think of this process
as a discussion.
As a discussion, and we just giving you something.
And your strategy is squeezing more data into available space, of course, so there is compression, data deduplication. Like, is there any other strategy besides those two? Any of you guys?
These are the two main ones that people talk about. Consolidation is the second. Consolidation is more inline strategy, where you consolidate more workloads into fewer storage devices, and as a consequence of that, you over-provision in less space by combining things together.
On the last strategy, which is the one where we're going to concentrate the most, is the use of the good more power efficient. And there's a lot of research done on optimizing the facilities, getting better power supplies, putting the servers in a cold environment, in red hands, also the use of solid state disks, which are relatively ideally proportional. They provide ideal energy proportionality, but they're expensive, and they cannot be widely used for now. All the research is done in hybrid systems, and also with high capacity, that hybrid is a with high performance like flash. There's research done on that, and there's the best of both worlds. I guess you have the trade off between capacity and performance in the research, what your system needs the most.
Do you consider the
argument
that I guess because they generally have a CPU, which is a low power drain, but usually what happens when you have a very small consumption and you have an extreme body, then you have an active system that starts to turn on the idle, you know, for one which is what you get to the controller. But then as you start doing some operations, the power consumption doesn't do. It's not really an energy consumption. It's not battery energy, but it's good is that it consumes very few power. It's very powerful.
Do I understand that solid state disks don't have moving parts, and so therefore energy proportionality is purely algorithmic in some sense? So.
Right. But I would think that maybe in the future, even the idle state energy consumption can be minimized by, let's say, dynamic. DVFS, dynamic voltage and frequency scaling of the CPU inside here.
But that's what people would slow down, right?
I'm assuming. Slow down of.
Well, still slow down the CPU.
Right.
It must be something in the.
Spin down. You mean spin down?
I thought spin down was like turning off.
Sort of radio speed. Yeah, RPM. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Disk drives have two states, a commodity disk drive that you can buy.
Right.
Actually, three states. One is active, whether it be reading or not reading, we consume approximately the same power. And then there is a standby state, and then there is a power on state where it doesn't consume. Power state for commodity disk drives. Some disk drives which are more expensive and they are not that widely used have the multi-speed technology where the disks have the capability to spin at different speeds.
There I assume that the energy used is proportional to the
is more proportional. More proportional than the non-multi-screen.
Right. I think what happens is those that they, I mean, you can only service IO at certain speeds. Yeah. So what they do is that, well, they're not servicing IO, they go to a lower speed. And it takes substantially less time from that lower
to go back to
the full speed than from power up station. Because from power up station it's like 10 seconds and the standby.
Yeah.
And from that look, from that one it takes like a second and a half.
You're saying there aren't that many intermediate stages? Just one,
I think it was one or two.
Yeah, but it all depends on who is manufacturing the technology and whether it's widely available for you. And right now it's not. So most people don't even consider that technology as a valid technology. So yeah, it exists, but what do you really use it? It's too expensive.
And I think only one paper talking about that, you know, and
but they're actually, you can buy them, because when we were building the chip, there was an option to buy this with very well.
I've seen that with processors, where
the DVFS that Brian was talking about.
Right. But I'm talking about the processor inside the SSD, because SSDs have very complex software that run inside them for doing management of the SSD.
So I guess that something else that keeps happening. For instance, there are this SSD that's coming PCI Express card, like the one that you actually bought.
Yeah.
And that one usually uploads the processing to the CPU too. And in that case, you can limit the amount of processing you want in the CPU, right? So you can have some degree of energy
shutdown.
There is also another technology. I don't know if they saw it, but a disk that rotates very slow, because it turns out that in the disk, the most energy proportion part is the head. So if you slow down the disk, the rotation of the disk, then most of the energy is spent in the head. So there are these disks where you have a slow rotation, but you use, instead of using one head at a time, you use all the head.
Yeah.
So in the end, you will have the same throughput as a normal disk, but with a better energy
source. Right. I think that was in Chicago, Virginia, University of Virginia.
Yeah, I do remember. Correct.
Yeah. So and then we're gonna go over different.
So just one more question. So this energy proportionality for solid state disks, there's a lot of work in this direction.
Not much, but that's a good thing to think about. Though it's really hard to sell it now, because right now very few people think that we'll have SSD only system for the near future. Most people accept that there will be SSDs, but there will also be disk drives. And in which case, your disk drive is consuming most of the power. And so techniques that optimize power for the disk drive are going to be more effective than techniques that optimize power for SSD.
But you could do something that's futuristic, that sort of coming in a few years, it's probably a good idea to try and think about that.
Yes, it might be. We haven't thought about it. I haven't seen anyone else talking about it.
So then if you really think it is coming in a few years, then it's worth investing some effort in.
The other issue is that the reason why people don't, I think, go crazy about all different kinds of possibilities of SSD is because the technology itself is still quite unstable. It's not clear where
it's going to go. Is it like a large RAM or what?
It's a compact flash. Compact flash, so it's non-volatile.
Oh, it's non-volatile, but in some sense it's...
Yeah, but it's faster to do random operations on an SSD. Oh, this is the new drive.
Yeah.
It's just like a new piece back, but more fast. Well, this is more fancy than the PCI Express.
So this is a different, this is not really the traditional SSD. But it's,
but that's what
looks more or less like running data. If you open up a traditional SFC, then it would look like this, but the default SFC actually looks like a disk drive, whereas this one looks more like a, let's say, Ethernet card.
Problems are probably cleaner here because we don't have to worry about peak time and all the other issues.
Yeah, but there are other issues. A lot of communication because the technology is not that match. So there are, when for writing, it's a problem.
Yeah, the issue is that you have another level of indirection inside the device itself to make it a lot faster, which complicates the monitoring. But it's certainly worth looking at. You know, looking at SSDs, thinking into the future. I think it's worth doing that.
That's what I thought. If you want to sort of look at some a new area, and if you want something that has not been intensely studied already, it would be nice to be able to define to clearly. Specify, model the problems that arise there, and to think about simple algorithms like solving.
Yeah, I think we should look at that. Maybe Mario can take a look at it.
In the paper, the main challenge they put against this, I mean, there are many more, I guess, was their percentage.
Sure, that's okay.
That's
if you're short of technology coming in 5 years, fine. If it's expensive right now, that's still okay to kind of lay down all the models of computation that involve access.
Well, back to the question where the next, actually going to concentrate mostly in that. I went over the papers of Sierra, Bradley, and Thurston Map. And then this thing, we're going to go over distance slow down techniques to get better data than this slow down. It keeps all of this on all the time, and there's future power capabilities that allow you to turn down certain system components, lower the performance of the system, but at the same time, lowering the power used by the system. So, power down mechanisms, pretty much space in the observation that usually systems experience periods of idleness or low intensity work. They introduce into periods of high intensity work. So we would like to power down systems, decrease the number of active nodes when the load is low, and increase when the load is higher. So the former problem we call say given system is possible to define a strategy that is currently when to better power down systems to save the most energy. The approach that we're looking in the research is to try to formalize the problem into a more theoretical framework, simplify it, and try to get rid of many of the details that might kind of cloud your vision of the problem, and try to apply knowledge and algorithms to try to create strategies that might help you create more energy efficient solutions.
So, Winston, some time ago I read an article from AC Implementation talking about strategies.
I think I forwarded that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yes, I went over it. It's very helpful. Yeah, it was very good.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, I actually read it and I learned some stuff that I might, I probably going to go over the presentation. So,
research in energy efficient algorithms. So, I was saying before, the goal is to formally describe the problem,
provide a solid theoretical foundation for it,
be able to model it, and understand its limitations, and create worst case scenarios, average case scenarios, and compare different solutions in terms of this analysis that we mentioned.
And
we do it to create a solution and strategies that are proved mathematically to have a good performance without having to run simulations on systems that might deceive you because of some particular cases of the simulations that you run. I mean, you can prove mathematically that it can never perform worse than this and safer.
So I guess I wanted to go quickly over one simple example, just to quick try out.
Imagine a simple one device system that has several states, one active state, and a couple of lower power states that stand by, cool off, suspend.
And of course, resetting any of those states is going to imply different costs. Obviously, the active state is going to apply the most cost, and of course, it was not the cost in transition between different states. Usually, from lower states to active state, you have a higher cost.
So, the problem is usually over time, the device experiences a peak of high and idle periods,
and you want to define a strategy and online definition of the problem that helps you turn off the power down the device. I try to save them as amount of energy without incurring too many, having to power off the device very often because it's usually the most costly operation.
So one issue though, in the model to take into consideration loss of reliability due to take transmission?
In this model? Well, this model is very the simplest example. And I guess in more complex problems, you try to sometimes either relax the problem and take away some variables to be able to analyze it better. Probably after you analyze the simplest problem, after you solve the simplest problem, you can work till the next step and solve the a little bit more complex.
I was saying an online problem which makes the solution a little bit difficult because you don't have much of the future.
And I guess an image to
that over time, you can be in different states, stay in the same amount of energy. You don't know the future, how can you create a strategy which allows you to switch from state to state and save the most energy, and be able to start in state one, and then state two, state three, state four. The interval area enough for the core is going to be the lowest of all the possible. But if it's an online problem, you don't know when to switch from state to another state optimally, the problem becomes very difficult.
So in the online problem, you can create different solutions.
Why were some of those lines on the thick lines there? It seems like the envelope is drawn in the thick
The load. Energy
transition. Right. Yeah, it's certain time you're the amount of energy, so the total amount of energy at the time going over the figure. Max, state 1, state 2, state 4. So after we develop different solutions to the problem, which is an online problem, how do we find out statistics or I guess the data or its performance. And as I was reading on the link that you sent me, it's very good to compare it to the optimal algorithm which has complete knowledge of the future. And then in that way you can, for example, find how competitive this algorithm is defined. They will never be worse in times the optimal algorithm as opposed to this other algorithm that can do a little bit worse depending on certain scenarios. So now we're going to a really simple case on the two active states. I mean, before we had three low power states, so why have three low power states? provide more from one high power state to an active state, and one low power state to an active state. When you are in an active state, you can say that you consume power at a different, at a given rate of power. And you can disregard any power that you spend on the sleep state, because that's really low. And you also have a power of speeding up the distance going from the sleep state to the active state. Typically, this power of power expenditure, beta, is going to be larger than, depending on how much time you spend on it. So the system experiences an idle period of a long latency, and the problem is that you spin down the disk, and then right after you need to spin it up again, it's going to be much, much costly than if you kept the disk spinning for that amount of time, if the amount of T, if the length of T is short. So an optimal algorithm, it will detect the fuel. If the T is less than, you calculate the amount of energy you need to spend if you keep the device active all the time T, and then you compare it to how much does it cost to turn it off and then turn it off on the interval of length T.
So an optimal algorithm is one that knows the future.
And after that, then you can develop different online algorithms and compare it to the optimal algorithm. And so it's going over the link. One algorithm proposed is a deterministic algorithm, which the first thing it does is in an idle period, we mean in the active state. And after a certain amount of time, given by the how much energy does it take you to spin up and how much from the rate of energy to be active, after spend all our time, if we're still in an idle mode, then we spin down. And as soon as we need to practice the inactive time period ends, then you spin up again. So we found that the algorithm is too competitive because you can never do twice worse than the optimal algorithm. Well, I guess if you spend that over our time units in the active state, and you spin down, if right after you spin down the time that the system needs to power up again, then you're going to spend a better amount of energy. But the amount of energy that you wasted to spin down the system is going to be better. So it's better spinning up right after you spin down. It's going to be too better the amount of energy that you spent. We found that the optimal algorithm can only spend as much better amount of energy in the given time T. So this algorithm that we never spend more than twice as much energy as the optimal algorithm we spend. And in this way you can try different algorithms to see how competitive they are, and you can compare them to each other by comparing them to the optimal algorithm. Then also there are some randomized algorithms that are.
So the previous algorithm is very similar. We talk about this in class, and we talk about the keying problem, renting keys or buying keys. It's basically the same problem that casting is in class. But here he's going to tell you about the randomized algorithm, which we did not discuss.
So, can you apply more solutions to the neutron to this
The key problem is exactly the same as this. More or less.
Right.
Here there is a constant cost when it's on. There it wasn't exactly like that. We kind of need this solution every time we go through. It's very similar. This is more of a continuous version. That's a discrete version where you have to decide whether to rent or buy. Every time you decide to go.
But if you just look at the days on which you keep, that also becomes.
In some sense, yeah. So there is a very close relationship.
Yes.
You can see that this is basically that same solution reworked.
So you can take each day to real time.
Exactly.
That is the same problem.
Exactly.
So after the Joshua goes to randomize the group, they presented one algorithm that is shown to treat the composite sense of the deterministic algorithm. That's a little bit more complex than I haven't done or that kind of algorithm before, but pretty much it creates a probability estimate function to determine when to turn on the algorithm. So a given amount of time, it uses a probability function, and with a certain probability that it finds, it either turns off the disk or it keeps it on.
So who defines that function?
Who defines it?
Yeah, who is that function given? That function is given.
Okay. And the article presents
You can estimate the probability density function by looking at the last 3 years of data.
Yeah,
okay. You can build a model.
Yeah, I guess you could build it from there, but if you don't have that data, you can possibly build it online.
I guess there are probably issues related to that, but it's easier to understand if you assume the density function is not.
So research done by Carlin et al. Found that that probably is a Gaussian distribution that can use to use a randomized algorithm still in terms of the amount of energy that we need to spend to power up the machine and the amount of energy that we need to use to keep the machine active.
That's the difference here. That distribution is an input, it's not derived from the
positive.
But here we are. The best probability distribution function.
Yeah, derived from data gathered before.
No, because it's based on beta and R.
Yes, it's based on the energy expenditure of the system. Remember, this is a really simple case.
So that's in terms of what?
The rate of energy that you spend on your when the machine is active and the amount of energy that you spend power of the machine out on that time.
So it's at least the way I understand it, if you don't make any assumptions about the probability distribution, you can always design bad cases. Because you might make an assumption about the probability distribution, but in reality it's something else, and it drives you crazy in the sense that it always makes you take bad decisions. On the other hand, certain probability distributions are nice because you can only prove a comparative ratio if you know what the distribution is. Otherwise, it's not.
Right. So, what is the best probability distribution?
You can achieve that comparative ratio only if it's for given probability distribution.
That looks like that.
If it looks like that, you'll get 1.58. If you assume something else, let's say the Gaussian distribution or something like this, you'll get some other comparative ratio. What he's showing here is that amongst all possible probability distributions, this is the one where the comparative ratio is the best possible. You cannot achieve better than 1.58. What is interesting here is that this is now better than 2 previous one. That is surprising. But that is attained only if your probability density function looks like that. And there are other distribution functions where it will probably be 2, but there may be some other distribution functions where it will be
half. I saw the model the algorithm or transaction receives data according to a probability density function, which may not be the probability density function of the workload itself. I mean, the idleness distribution of the workload. This is the distribution that the algorithm uses to determine when to go down to the lower powers.
Well,
which you can control.
Theoretically, yes. But obviously it's not going to do well unless the density function you get is that of the workload.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's not going to do well. Yes, that's another question.
It's not the same when the algorithm used to
do a lot of...
To
do poorly.
Make a lot of...
It might either make conservative decisions are more for the opposite, whether it's the opposite of the
decision. Question is that, will it still attain a competitive ratio of 1.5?
No.
Given the NAGPRA rating?
No, I doubt that. Yeah, well, that's an interesting question, theoretical question. But what is the density function you assume doesn't match the actual data? That's what you're asking.
Right. Right. Let's say it's exactly the complement of the density function that you use.
Yeah.
Does the algorithm R still attain the same competitive ratio?
No, certainly not. So I mean, this is just a nice statement that says that amongst all probability density functions, if this is the real density probability function, then you can actually prove that the comparative ratio is 1.5. Is that correct? That's the statement, right?
No, just to check if I understood correctly. So, with these randomized algorithms, you cannot get better than 1.58.
Worse. You cannot do worse. You can never do worse than 1.5.
Oh, you can worse. So with another density distribution, you will get lower than 1?
Higher. It should be higher.
Higher.
You can never get lower than
1. Yeah. Okay. Then when I meant better, I meant going down to 1. Right? Because
right.
You get close to 1 better.
Yeah. So remember, now you're making some assumptions about the density function for the amount of time it's idle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, when it's active, there is no decision to be made. We're going to keep it on. Mm-hmm. So it's only when it's idle you have to decide when to turn it, when to power it down, and when not. So the question is, how long should you wait before powering it down? And so for that you have to make a guess as to how long it's going to be idle. And for this, you have a probability density function that says, okay, for this much length, this is the probability. For this much length, this is the probability based on the density function. And now you have a randomized algorithm that makes a guess on when to power it down based on what it sees, right? And what it says is that no matter how the actual distribution is, if the algorithm simply follows this rule, then it's going to achieve a competitive ratio of 1.58 in the worst.
People try to create a really bad case for it to fail, but then the probability of it being down the distance is going to be really low. So you can really
remember, whatever worst case you produce still has to satisfy that probability distribution function. Otherwise, not a valid situation to come
in. Well, there are other approaches, like stochastic algorithms that are over the articles, but I didn't want to concentrate as much on that because you'll have to go over the 4 papers.
Are there any other deterministic algorithms?
No.
If
you want to make it better, you have to try something different from the 7 minutes.
That's why this result is actually quite a bit interesting. You can essentially randomized algorithm, you can actually use the performance of the
deterministic. As I was saying before, first you solve a simple problem, the higher variables really, and step by step you end up solving a larger problem that would have been really difficult to analyze if you try to solve it at once with all the different variables and challenges and constraints that you get all at once. So, are you more complex systems have more state, multiple devices, a lot of requirements, and a lot of higher complexity.
But it's interesting that these guys are now saying that multiple states is not so relevant for storage. In a sense, it's not like there's a diary you can return to whatever. That's what I'm hearing from you. Is that completely inconceivable or?
No, there are drives. I mean, like Louis mentioned earlier, you can buy them, but very few people use them because the software that there is not enough software that can make good enough use of them to justify the additional cost of purchasing.
But I mean, I'm finding it hard to understand why you can't just slow down a disk. Because it's just turning, right?
Yeah, but
and just like you slow down the clock on a processor, this is in fact easier. At least from my electrical engineering days, you just take a real time and message it and it can slow it down. In terms of the technology, there's nothing, there's no real change, is there?
I don't know much about hardware level complexity that is involved in producing multi-speed.
Yeah.
At some point, there was a lot of promise for them, but then that batch, about 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. So I can also see the thing, it's more of the software managing that drives the issue. There's no need for writing OS that manages these with a different speed. Nobody does it.
But if there is going to be real power saving, then it would be. It would be worth it to spend some time trying to come up with better algorithms for that situation, right?
Yeah. The thing is, it's a chicken and egg problem, and it's also an economics of scale problem. Chicken and egg problem is, until you have the drives in mass production, people are not going to write software for it, right? And until there is software that uses the drives, it doesn't make sense to go and buy them, right? And the second is economics of scale, because these are new technologies, right? And this, the simpler disk drives have been out there for so many years that the costs on those drives are really, really optimized. Whereas if you bring in a new drive with this additional fancy capabilities, the additional cost is going to be substantial, at least in the beginning, until people start adopting those new drives en masse.
All that I understand, but if a company goes and makes such a drive, it could easily become widely used.
No, that's what I'm saying. I think it's a chicken and egg problem with the software and the hardware and also the cost issue. Right? Any company, if it wants to sell any new technology, they have to work through this really difficult problem.
It turns out that at least theoretically, you just look at the simplest problem. The simple problem really doesn't say much because the real problem is fairly complex. But even with the simple problem, it seems that even if you have these multiple states, many of the solutions easily
I don't understand. I'm saying instead of thinking about it that way, why don't I think about it where
half my disks are running at half the speed or slow speed or high speed, and the others are working at full speed, right?
Right.
Instead of thinking of them as being turned off, I just think of them as turned down a little bit.
I guess it would be worth looking into. I was reading here in the system slow down paper that today the amount of energy spent in storage in the network is around 25% of IT. I guess there is some saving to slow down, but I guess it wouldn't be as much in other fields in which we could do research for energy. But I think in the future, it would be worth it to do research on that.
I think those numbers have to be taken with some qualification, because the kind of machines that, let's say, is typically used in a Google's data center, where they have very different kind of machine versus a more common case data center, are very different, and therefore the energy distribution across various components are also going to be different across different data centers. So a single number such as 25% for disk and network, although it's fine, you have to look at what kind of data centers fail. There are some other data centers where the numbers are
used. Okay, so I guess, it gives more points to do research on that. Mm-hmm. it slow down as well as different alternatives for food.
Well, to continue on the presentation, some of the new papers that I went over, one is the Sierra paper,
developed by Microsoft Research
Foundation UK. It was done in 2009. Then we're going to go to the SRC Map paper developed here at the International University of Ocean and Media Research. I guess it was 2009 as well.
Yeah.
And Rabbit, coming out and doing it the last 5 years ago.
It's more advanced and more complex than the first map, so I guess it was the later.
But not before the map paper, it was down, and it criticizes the power down mechanism a lot.
So it develops a system that doesn't power down mechanisms.
Just kind of summarizing this table. Sierra, I think, map and Larry Tarnoskis, while the latest paper on the data is of Tarnoskis. And also, Sierra and SSMAT, for what I understood, they do cut down availability.
They don't have all the data active all the time.
For Rabbit, for example, it never turns off this that all primary replicants of data.
So it all provides full availability all the time, active data.
And if you slow down mechanism, of course, it also provides full availability all the time, but you can never turn off. So, power down mechanisms. It needs to take care of the requirements. Power down proportionally, I guess the goal is to provide a system that's power proportional. Those requirements that you need to provide certain level of data availability for reads and writes. That all the data might not be available all the time, but it's not as quickly as possible. You need it to one half. Also, if you need to be consistency, because you're going to have replicas and disks that are powered down and then you're going to rely on them. I mean, if you take into account that to be able to keep the replicas consistent with one another, they become active. Of course, you don't want to destroy the performance of the system too much just by increasing the energy efficiency, so that's the trade-off that you think about. You need to be more scalable. As the complexity increases as you make the energy efficient. And you also need to have a robust environment.
So, just a quick comment. I mean, if you're able to really do slow down with fine grain, then you can make independent decisions for each machine whether you want to slow it down or not based on how much traffic there is over there, instead of making global decisions, because now a lot of the decisions are being made globally, in the sense if you want to power something down, you need to make sure that there's a replica of it elsewhere, so they're all sort of connected. You can't make a decision about this machine independent of what else is there on the other machine.
I'm not sure that I think like looking globally, you might find better solutions, but I cannot give a specific example.
But
it makes
sense.
Yeah.
Well, the paper that I read on the slow down, they presented each server as a node, and the node is sort of servers that are utilized in high load, and one server that are utilized in low load, they keep all the disks shared. That particular node and individual can be the most distributed.
That's sort of what I'm saying, yeah. It looks like decisions can be made distributed. They can be made independent of what is happening elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes for easier algorithms in some sense. Right? If such a technology is possible, then it's probably worth thinking about it.
So we're going to go over that system, but just to talk a little bit more about it, it's missing high load, full blown system, and also runs all the applications. When it's going to be low load, it just reduces the size of the virtual machine and just takes care of retrieving data to other nodes that might want to access the data.
So going back to power down mechanisms, So this is pretty much the observations and the flows that this mechanism follows to explore the central variations in higher load using fixed controls. It's exploit the redundancy that's present in the system that is also required for when it's higher load. Follow down and of course the flow is follow down to the direction it's not possible to save energy.
So now the story is here.
So the process of follows is dividing data sets into chunks, and it's going to replicate the chunks into a series of chunk servers. So for each chunk at any time, one of the replicas, the chunk is going to be the primary replica, and the rest of the replicas are going to be secondary. In a way, each chunk server is going to be a primary server for some replicas, it's going to be a secondary server for the other.
So all the read requests are sent to the primary, and all the write requests are sent to all replicas. Of course, some chunk servers are going to be down, so not all the replicas are going to be available. But we're going to go over how it handles the consistency for writes.
The read requests are only going to primary. Why do you care about writing to all the replicas?
To be consistent. Primary
can change.
Yeah, it's not going to turn on the disk to write the replica, it's going to save it somewhere else and then write it to the replica when they become available. I guess it's a little bit misleading to this early to say that it's going to go to a replica without saying that.
So it looks like replicas might change. Sorry, primary might change.
Primary might change.
So the goal is to have a power well data layout with a given number of replicas. They think of a power aware system if they can allow, given R, say the number of replicas, the number of replicas you want to keep active at any given time. They want to have a data layout that allows you to turn off this number of systems given by the number of replicas that you want to
I'm not really sure why they.
So one question. So the idea behind keeping multiple replicas is because of reliability or because of power awareness?
Both.
Replicas is just purely reliability issue.
Right, it says it exploits the redundancy.
And also load balance. Yeah, but they're not using it for load balance.
Not in this.
No, not in this scenario.
But they're building on top of the Google style new
platform that applications are available. So Jira aims to create a data layout that allows you to turn off that amount. I'm not really sure what all the mathematical background that they utilize to come up with that. Power proportional.
Okay. Here it assumes that the replication cycle is constantly uniform for all the chunks.
Right, for each chunk it has a replicate. And if at any moment of time you want to.
So that's not assumed in your factor,
right. Each working set doesn't have that same one.
Right.
In this system.
So how does it do it? The server is trying to assign one of the so create our peer groups. If I wanted to maybe the device of the service is peer groups.
Here, so for each chunk of the data set, And pretty much the way you're going to pronounce this is by power down all your groups. So anytime you put your hand directly to each one of your groups, you can use one of your groups active issue outside the school. Basically, this way, so if you pronounce the time, you can use your groups, which is the number of copies you want to type in, the number of total number of copies in this chunk. So you can power down n and the total number of service times the proportion of problems you have service and this layout you achieve having a reduced parallelism of n divided by r because as the server goes down, you can you're going to be able to get all the data from and divide by R different all the data.
The only problem I see with this approach is that you're basically replicating every I.O., right? Every write I.O., so they get multiplied. So probably when you have all devices turned on and you have the highest degree of activity, you're also increasing, right, the degree of activity, which could potentially make things even worse.
Cool, yes, because it tries to write all the replicas at the same time for each write.
You're going to make things worse, like crash.
Peer schedule. So how do you decide which number of peers to run up at the given time?
You pretty much follow this approach. You find the aggregate load or chunk server, that is three public, and they ready to mount these numbers. First they find this load by dividing that one total high operations per second divided by the actual operations of that server. And for a write, this write. And they have to have a factor of R because for each write you have to write go over different replicas. So more important to actually go over the system. And we do that for sequential data, sequential data. Because they have different kind of the way they have to load different.
So they always have to have to get replicas.
If the replicas are active,
yes,
they write for the replicas. If the replicas are inactive, they write to merge. If they become available, they write.
The other question I have here is that are the chunks mapped to exactly one server in the gear group, or is it spread across all the servers?
One
chunk.
One server.
So if there is sort of this variability of activity across the chunk, you cannot utilize that factor. Right? So let's say chunk 1 is highly utilized, but it will have only as many copies as every other chunk active.
Right.
And that decision is made on the based on the total I/O across all the chunks. Right, so there may be some servers that are hit more than other servers. So the load balancing is an issue. And I think Rabbit tries to address that.
Yeah, because Rabbit tries to help the active servers do the same amount of work.
Mm-hmm.
Third main goal. But here, there's some chunks are more active than other chunks, and some servers are having more active.
Right. So the load balance is not addressed in a good way.
So they come out with a number of peers to be run off by finding the load of each one of the servers and adding all the load using that variable for a number of the total cluster replication files. and they always go in order, but every once in a while they can change the order of the fields. This is the primary migration protocol. They decide that this chunk is going to be a primary anymore. They need to go to the protocol to make another primary, another secondary to the primary. And I include this primary migration protocol process if that replicas are not even available during that time, so some applications like that can come out with a higher latency, which I guess are not be affected by.
But you should always have at least one replica active, right?
Right, but when you make the primary replica active, when you use the second one, deactivate like another replica active, during that transition, you might have problems with latency and applications to isolate.
Which is why they add a no or yes in there, where the in that chart, in the table that you showed us, is that why there is a yes in the active availability column? And if you go back a couple of slides, yeah, there. Cut data availability, Sierra, you have a yes. Is that why you have a yes? Because there, in the primary is switched, then
yeah,
data.
Yeah, that would be the only reason, because all the data is always okay. Which chunk has a replica, which one is this. But the latency is so short that I'm not sure that we should count it.
Yeah, which is why I was surprised when you put a yes in the first year. I would think it would be a no.
Yeah, actually SNC map is the only approach that for a long time data on other
could make
data on other data.
And that's because it is a very extensive.
So we're saying when you may write replicas of IPs, you will keep it in the version control and they become available. Way right to them. Right, you have a primary one server and two goes down, pretty much need to spin up all of this, but it requires to be able to rebuild that server. And of course, when you join the load here, not only one copy, one replica, and that would cause, if one of the server goes down, would cause a really high status penalty. Well, that's all with Jira, I guess. That's all with the server's map. Do you want to discuss something else or any questions?
Yeah, I would suggest maybe discuss Rabbit before we start them, because they are in the same model. They follow the same model. That would be easier.
I just wanted to take this occasion also to ask maybe one or two clarifying questions about the question mark. Because the paper sometimes gives some parts, and I guess I wanted to clarify it. So here, I've asked to type notification. So you remember this part, it finds the active load of the system and the bandwidth of each system. And then you find the minimum set of this, such that the aggregate bandwidth is the workload.
Mm-hmm.
How does it find this minimum subset? Is it pretty much reasonable? First it goes into the...
I think there is an ordering process.
It's
not reasonable. It is sort of greedy, right? But there is it uses some criteria, but and not randomly greedy.
Oh, well,
yeah.
There were some
things
that you always have to turn off the first one, then you check if the first one you are able to develop all the values before.
If not, then you go to the second one.
Yes, yeah, so you find that minimum subset and you say, all right, I'm going to try to keep this active. Mm-hmm. Then you try to do the mapping of the portion space on this. If you cannot, then you say, okay, I'm going to try to keep this active.
Yeah.
And the other thing I wanted to clarify is the replica placement. Mm-hmm. So you go over the first seat, and then you try to find the core. But pretty much you try to find the highest set of weights of nodes that fill up the replica space. Mm-hmm. Like pretty much you try to find the highest weight edge and see if it fits. And after if it fits, you allocate it into the replica space and you find the highest next weight of this and if it's the working set. Working space, the working set that fits you, allocator or not.
Right. So here there is
a
probability distribution of whether primaries will stay active or not.
Right.
So you want to create more replicas for data where the primary is more likely to be turned off.
Right.
So that's the basic idea of the replica place.
Yeah, and that's the weight at the beginning once you start the algorithm, the weight very close probability.
Yes, because you have create an additional replica, you have to readjust the weight for that specific working set.
Right. So you first go to the highest probability, the working set fits, you allocate it, and then you work to the next probability, highest probability. If it doesn't fit, you don't allocate it, then you work to the next probability. You're kind of freely like that.
Yes.
With the highest probability.
Yes, these are
largely greedy. Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to clarify those because during analysis, those parts were kind of kept lower, so I just wanted to make sure that I understood it right. Okay, so Rabbit. So, Rabbit, as I mentioned before, its goal is to have all the active servers in the system and spend the same amount of energy. And the same amount of work. So what it does is have several goals. One of the four goals we have is to be able to provide low minimum state, low minimum power, minimum performance state. And also another goal that it has is to also be able to provide a high maximum performance power state. So those are two things. It wants to be able to provide a really low performance state. When the load is really low and a high performance state, you want to the system to run full blast.
And also, as I mentioned, it means that it wants to have all the disks do the same amount of work. And that's represented in the ratio of work divided by power. Throughput divided by power equals for all the disks.
Yeah, that's the power proportionality constraint, not the load balancing.
Well, yeah, it aims for ideal power proportionality, which it cannot achieve, but it tries to achieve.
You mentioned that it was a system that doesn't need any kind of data
to scale up for that.
So, try to create a simple work reality app and define the data set that you try to use to define set of files, and for each data set, it's going to have a given particular function chain, which is a set of all the nodes that are going to, that the data set is going to have blocks stored on. And these nodes are ordered by a particular preference. So you're making
different for each data set?
Each data set has a different function chain.
Okay.
And they might have the same nodes, but in different orders.
what's your issue? What issue that is?
Well, it's kind of, I guess, let me speak very quickly. It's going to try to allocate to the data sets to allocate the data differently. So each node is going to have more of this data set than this data set. So if you want to divide the load equally, you can allocate each node to here.
Ah, okay.
Different data set. For whichever active data set, for whichever data set is active, you're going to allocate the full higher bandwidth of that node for that subset. So things more data, that's that.
Okay.
So, before you start, you have the video number as well. So it's in the order of kind of following the default work that we have policy for each one of the disks.
We have to set up a set of nodes which are the primary, or all the primary levels. And those nodes are never normal for this. And it's up to them that following
the expansion chain of the data.
So all these nodes are going to hold the primary copy of the data set, and then have a different node. This one which is holding the secondary replica, and this one which is holding the core replica, and so on.
So for each one of the nodes that are holding the primary nodes of the data space, is going to hold a given different amount of data. Like the total number of data should be the total amount of data divided by the index of the number in the partition chain. And you're going to put some data here and you see data here.
They are all different data.
They have different amount of data.
Amount of replicas of the same data?
No, just different data.
Different data.
Like for example, so these are the nodes of all replicas. These nodes should have a full copy of the data. We're going to hold the second replica.
Of everything. Can you, does that make an assumption you can fit everything in one server? In one, can you fit all data in one server?
No, that's I didn't mean what server, a set of nodes.
Oh, in a set of nodes.
In this set of nodes, I allocate the full data.
Primary.
Okay. In this set of nodes, I allocate the
secondary
copy.
But that sounds like the gear groups of Sierra, isn't it? I mean, that's the first primary, and then the secondary, and so on. Isn't that like Sierra, or something like
that? Yeah, it's different, but each one of the servers is going to hold a different amount of data from that data set. As opposed to Jira, where each peer holds one copy of the chunk.
Okay. So here, your second set of servers will hold a different number of replicas for each chunk?
A different number of replicas, it means it's not the whole data space, and it's going to hold amount of data.
Oh, just a subset of the data.
Right.
It's going to hold a subset of the data. Okay. But I thought you had all secondary replicas in that. Not for everything. For some subset. Is that right?
Each server can hold a subset of the data, but for the server the yellow page for the secondary replica, it's for the data.
So how's that different from the Sierra? Are they a different number of servers?
The server holds a different amount of data.
Oh, so if you contrast it with the Sierra, there are different number of servers in each gear in the rabbit case.
Depending on servers? Well, here there are the number of servers
it's driven by the replication practice.
Right.
And how to do replication practice. And that is, for example, but the number of years.
It must be.
It can be, it's mostly kind of compared to the number of recovery groups, not necessarily because you have our replicas, our peer groups.
Maybe we can look at this to understand
this. Well, I thought that this will maybe be more helpful.
Sure.
That was the first so let's look at this one. And here is a full copy of that one of the parameters.
Can we look at data set 3 because I cannot figure out where data set 1 is? Because that's. What is data? Data set 1 is everything? The whole
no, the one to the left.
Oh, I see. Okay. Data set 3, data set 3 has a lot more footprint, lot bigger footprint, I think.
It just spread the data among the
but I think it makes the assumption that all data sets are the same world. Exactly,
that's
the same world all the time. Well, I think that most data is, you know, for cases, right? Mm-hmm. So in the data set 1, you're going to have the first node is going to be active most of the time because they contain all the data. Right? The same happens for data set 3 and 2, but it's just different set of nodes.
I guess, yeah, the only thing they care is about the size of the data set and they allocate the copies. They don't make any... They don't allocate thinking of the I/O.
This didn't show me where the replicas are. Where do I see that?
I guess I'm going to use it. For data set 9, the original one, and a few below one node numbers.
Oh, so one node can store all of data set 1?
Well, the first one is the original, the primary.
That's the full data set one.
Yeah, but if you move, let's say, to node 60, 60 has, you know, 1 over 60 is 60 of the size, the first one.
That's a small piece.
Yeah.
So basically
1 over 60 is 60.
Right. I don't know if you can see well from here, but I was trying to find it here. On the first node on the expansion chain, it's going to create a full copy of the data set. So it's this node, I'm going to put my data set completely.
Okay.
And then we select another subset of nodes, okay. And just connect with another full copy of the data.
Okay, on more number of nodes.
Yeah.
And then the third replica has a much even larger footprint.
Right, because it's gonna, after it stores the primary replica, in each one of the secondary replicas, mm-hmm. in each server, it's gonna store a maximum of B, which is the total amount of blocks, divided by the index.
Okay.
So as it increases, the amount of data that it's going to have stored in the server is going to be lower, lower and lower.
I guess in that case, as you move right, you will have more bandwidth.
Bandwidth? Well, the way it goes, it works is that at any point in time, each node is allocated completely to only one data set. So if you allocate this node to this data set, it's just going to work.
The problem is that if you move everything to one node, then at some point that node cannot serve all the requests. There were like four stages, right? So in the two screens, you have one stage where you have a lot of power saving, but low bandwidth. And in the other end, you have a lot of bandwidth, but low power saving.
And, well, we haven't gone over that, because we kind of skipped around all things in this in Rabbit. But it always keeps this on. If this to the right are on, then this to the left are going to be on.
Yeah, but the weird thing is that then they distribute, let's say, data set 2 in the other branch.
To the right.
That's
yeah, right. Let's just continue over that, maybe it'll help us. Well, I mean, just
have to go.
So
you can just continue.
So after we go down, that each one of them on primary nodes, we store B divided by I blocks of the data set. And that's where we get a distribution, like the one in data set 1. And then, of course, data set 2 is going to have a different expansion chain from data set 1, and here it happens to be virtual. And the other set 3 is going to have a different function chain, which is the one in the middle and then the one to the side. So the way it stores that is kind of a score.
So that distribution works for 3. What if you have more than 3?
If you have 4, then it's going to go.
Each data needs score to store. Once you store that 1, the next node is going to have a really high score.
And that's what I was saying.
I find it very complicated to calculate what is the ideal set of bits to have on at a given time if you have too many bits.
Well, if you have, let's say, M dataset, okay, 3 active live datasets, for each one of the nodes, you're going to see which dataset contributes the most to the score of the node. And then you're going to allocate the full bandwidth of that node to that dataset.
Yeah, but there you have all nodes turn on. So what if they don't turn off anything?
Yeah, we'll go over that.
That's what I mean.
I guess we can go liter by liter and present the full system, or if you can, we can ask questions and then we'll go to the slide that talks about it. And we're lost probably now. So, here I was explaining what I was saying before about this core. I guess we understood that, so we don't need to go into too much detail on that. So, and so here's what I was saying, after you have N different data sets active, then for each one of the nodes you're going to allocate it to only one specific data set. And the full bandwidth of the node is going to be allocated to it. If a data set goes down, then you distribute the nodes that were allocated to it to the rest of the active data set.
family. Of course, it's not ideal in the case where
they use write overloading. Yeah, I was just going to mention that. So, kind of version control. If you have a copy that is not active and you store it somewhere else, and they write for that copy, when it becomes available, you write for it.
Okay, so there's a penalty when you change your writing, right? You have to do all those writes to make it.
Yeah. I mean, slowly you're going to need to be able to have all the different blocks. In the event of failure of the server, just try to restore all the properties. We need to make the data from that server available. We need to conserve the same equal work layout. We need to make all the so for each server, when the server goes down, we're gonna activate a full set of servers to be able to build it up again. So we're gonna divide all the servers, the secondary servers, into recovery groups. As well, we're gonna divide all the servers into gear groups. And the way we're gonna have the big granularity in which we're gonna activate servers or deactivate servers, it's not gonna be one by one. We either activate full gear groups or power and performance of the system. Different set of servers, if you want to turn it off, different of the different servers. Every time you turn off a new gear of servers, you're going to have a full copy of the data set from all the factories. It doesn't make sense to activate this from that have a copy of this primary one on this primary, because it will be fair, I guess. And they are looking up to always try to create an equal amount of work for each one of the active servers. And each one of the servers in the gear, each one of the gears that you either activate or deactivate, they're just trying to make it have do the same amount of work. So, as we were saying before, in the expansion chain, the lower the index of the server is supposed to handle work from more blocks of data, but it actually tries to have all the servers in the same gear do the same amount of work. It doesn't really apply the proportionality of people work, where they all do the work for be divided by 5 blocks.
And then they have different, since they allocate all these different gear groups and recovery groups in kind of a unique kind of fashion, you need to the size of the gear groups and the size of the recovery groups. And this is the relationship that they found. Recovery group size equals the function of the size of the gear groups, G, which P is the size of the set of primary nodes, which C equals.
Another confusing map.
Yeah, the average.
Yeah, this one is very complicated.
David was the most complicated of all the systems. It was very complicated.
But still, their main goal is energy proportionality?
Yeah, the main goal for them is to have all the servers that are active do the same amount of work. So they try to have data.
But that's different from energy proportionality. It includes a single pulse.
Yeah, there's the whole they care about their equal work layout also.
Not exactly in the same class of systems.
Right. Yeah. CRM SMC map
and they're more concerned, so it doesn't seem like they're concerned about powering down or powering up, they're more concerned about failure. So it seems more like a fault tolerance system that
and energy proportionality, yes, more tolerant and they concentrate a lot in fault tolerance because they say that currently fault systems are normally in a fault state. So they concentrate mostly in the distributed fault systems that are really large. They see a lot of importance in doing data layouts for a lot of fault tolerance. They say that fault tolerance states are more than the exception nowadays. A lot of work doesn't put as much importance to that. So they make it really complicated.
Shouldn't that score thing again?
After that we have the other
Spin down.
This slow down. You were saying
score. Just
the
score thing that you use. So what is again? L of D is
index. Yeah. So that's how they create this distribution. Because at the beginning, from Li is less than P, the primary node, they'll have the same importance in score. So as you see, they all have the same value, the number of plot scores in the output. Then as the index of tile starts increasing, then the scores start decreasing. And so that's where the process will take that function. That's one of our
hyperbola. That's the number of copies?
No, that's just the score. In that case, the number of copies is B divided by the number of primary nodes for all the primary nodes, that's the number of blocks of each primary node and a whole. And for each one of the nodes, there are not primary nodes and a whole. B divided by I, where I is the index of the function chain.
I see. So the first trip is all primary nodes, and then the next trip is all secondary responses.
Right. it doesn't start creating new replicas until it allocates full second replica of the data. First store the primary nodes and then store the full
embossing. Is it possible to combine this with the working set idea?
The working set that somehow push it through to make more copies of that, and then you
go down to the next what they call the primary. But actually,
I mean,
this is
the working
set,
that.
I know, but you could combine the two. That way, you get the advantages of both.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
But still focus on so here is the primary somehow important, and they make sure that that those are spread out in, over a certain set of what do they call it? Yeah, I guess peer groups are what, so they spread them out over some peer groups, right? Over some nodes?
You should brush them to touch them up?
No, the rabbit.
The rabbit? Yeah, kind of a peer group. But one copy of the data set, the first set of nodes, one copy of the second set of nodes.
Yeah. You're saying that the first copy should be a full replica, but the next one should be a full replica.
Like, clearly you want working set to be more important, so you
or the other way around.
Yeah, you make that as the top priority, and then you sort of deal with the rest of the people.
So, I guess let's go quickly or just slow down. I know that's quite fast over time. The presentation was really long, and on top of all the discussion, I really didn't think we were going to finish on time, but it was you guys have something else to do, we all understand.
That's fine, right?
Yeah,
sure.
So that's the power down mechanism, I guess there's some discussion before we move to so here they criticize the availability of the power down mechanisms that usually turn off this and usually use availability of replicas. Although we think some of the implementations you don't really always suit availability of the data.
So here the assumption is that going from one of these medium power states to back to being turned on takes less time and less energy. Is that what the idea is?
Yeah. So they create these two states of a maximum performance state, which has a lot of servers and calculation, and a low performance state, which has only a minimum amount of servers. And they keep up with this one all the time. And depending on the low state effect, we may either on the high load state or the low load state. And something in the low load state doesn't respond to any applications, it only helps the other nodes.
Wait, this has off? Do you have the second bullet? The phone
thing
has off.
You're in the high load system.
All this stuff. So for the views and the service graph, the high level data, when you go into a low system, you're going to be access to the low load system. Only one of the system is not up.
Oh wait, so the lower powered state also has different controller?
They have the first machine and they move to the lower power state service. And they only take care of retrieving data not by other nodes. They don't have to run an application.
Data,
somehow now they are making the problem more complex by also introducing this the processor side of things.
Yeah, I guess they only care about the processor side of things because they don't turn off the at all, and they kind of give the importance to the storage and the automation that it works as well. The storage, power consumption of storage network is only 15%.
Yeah, I think that that number varies a lot depending on the architecture of particular tasks. Very between, probably that's 15 and 45%.
No, actually 25%. I guess 25 is also saying that it's.
Well, the thing is that, I mean, yes, half, usually half of the power is used just in cooling.
Right.
And then the other half is for all the IT systems. So 25% is that actually 50% of all the energy for IT equipment is used for storage. And 15 means that actually 30% of all the IT, all the IT power is used for storage.
But I guess you could also do research.
Oh, no, they're saying total IT. Oh, okay, this is different. It's actually a very low number.
Well,
you said it's less, the particular disk is used less, and this can be added into it. And
they're not, no, they're very inefficient. So that's usually what they do, because they have like, a lot of some fans on the floor that blow the air, just like those, but they have them on the floor, right? And then they have the rack. The idea is that the cool air goes up and cools the rack, and then by the time the
hot air goes up.
Exactly. So the cool air gets blown from the bottom, so it starts getting warmer as it goes up, and then it will push the hot air up, and then the hot air will be captured by some, I think they're called cracks, or something like that, I don't remember what it's called, but it's basically a very big air conditioning unit, and that repeats the cycle. So they don't distribute it to a particular hot spot.
Most of the heat is generated from the processor end, or from the storage?
Well, those systems are very compact, so
I know that the ground over there is a lot of and the drums and the RAM going up here, so, and the heat is, the heat of the energy is cleaner and
cleaner.
Because the
dark is cleaner. Yeah, of course, I think that. No, somehow, I mean, the picture I have in my head is, okay, if this volume is used less, just slow down the fan.
Yeah. Well, I know that HP
have less power use.
Yeah. I mean, they do some of that, for instance. Like the DBFS scaling, the fans also have the cooling fans for internally. Each machine also has multiple speeds. And there you have some proportionality. But in terms of the overall cooling, there's not many. Yeah, those are independent systems. And also there's the
cooling
part. Yeah, I know that HP is doing a lot of work in that area.
But individualized,
there are just, you know, I guess we're pretty kind of talked about all the nice, most important details.
So they run some experiments on, they found that in low power system they found a really good ratio of performance versus power. Of course, in a low power system, you'll do much work.
six main.
So which ones are the low power systems?
Asterix 1 and Asterix 2. The difference between Asterix 1 and 2 is power pretty much different processes. We have an Intel probably the hardware. We have different power and probably is the five lowest.
You can see how the weight is rising,
the proportion of throughput to divide by what? How much work divided by power. And you can see the whole battery system is better than others. And especially as it's screws, that's better. And Asterix 1 doesn't do much. It's much better, but again, doing just as well, you find it. Even if the proportional performance and power was the same, it's still less power. So that's all the material I wanted to present. And I'm sorry the presentation didn't really go very clean, but it was a lot of information.
I think most of the discussions you'll find collected. I don't think this was anything.
I have a question. Do these other works for digital analysis of the algorithm? No.
Zero. These papers have very zero to analysis.
That's why
I papers are all separate papers, right?
There is this conference in metrics and performance, and I saw that there people are starting the same kind of problems, like lowering power and consolidation,
right.
And I guess if you're more interested in the theory of Lagrange expansion, you should take a look on those hypotheses instead of these systems. I can point you to a couple of papers.
Okay,
yeah. Because these ones have many experiments.
But I think the paper that Louis sent has it's a very decent paper, if I'm not mistaken. It has a lot of the major references. I think this particular presentation, I don't think the theoretical analysis was the focus.
Right.
And that was the whole question.
And I guess there is some information afterwards that can be used. But I guess at the beginning, which is for the papers to the group, we will have a discussion and maybe have ideas.
But I think it's different way that you try to view it more. The theory, the algorithm is more intense. Systems absolutely nobody.
Create a solution.
But actually, kind of makes sense because systems people is more concerned about the average case.
No, we don't care. But you can still analyze it for average case.
But the average case is like a trace from a web server.
So, for instance, if you can show a correlation between your analysis and the performance, then you essentially are making a case for good theoretical analysis before you go and implement it on the solution.
Yes.
I guess you have less resources to look on. So that's kind of the approach following. Simplify the solution, formalize the theoretical framework, kind of solve the algorithm.
So
you had one slide where you show like the incremental steps in your modeling that you plan to do, right? Like you started with this very simple model, and then you said, okay, I'm going to add that I only had two states. And you said, okay, I'm going to add more states.
Well,
this
is the model. I just put it to mention that, you solve it for a simple case and you make it more complex.
Okay.
But I didn't have any specific.
Okay, that's not a roadmap.
No. I think I agree.
If I had to guess what a good roadmap would be, so here it's only the simple case that he looked at only considered either turning on or turning off the disk. But really, there are more issues. Once you talk about multiple disks, there may be different power performance characteristics. There may be different load characteristics. all the factors that you guys have looked at, but those need to be slowly worked into the model. That's where the two issues are.
What's the name of those methods you use? Did you call me upstairs? For some math stuff, you know, for... No, but other stuff, some
Markov
chain, yeah. So I saw this at this conference, some guy was modeling the, you know, the server's population problem, like just at least state on and off. It's something Markov chain, the model is Markov chain, and they show that an optimal algorithm. I can point you to that page.
So the Markov chains would be relevant, for instance, if you think of the disk as being in, say, four different states, what is the probability of going from this state to that based on the data that you have? And once you have that, then you can look at real characteristics and then estimate it.
We worked on a project using Markov chain like 2 years ago.
Markov chain simply says what is the probability of the next step given this step.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. That was for artificial intelligence.
It's sort of like a finite state machine except
for... we did something. Yeah.
I guess all the information I have to present, I guess the rest is depending on how you write one piece of code or something.
No, I think there's useful feedback on what are interesting problems to look at. We should definitely also look into this SST network, it's called Stadia. It's still not clear to me whether different power states are meaningful for a disk. It seems it's meaningful for a processor, but not for storage. Well, currently it's not, but maybe it can be in the future. So the question is, it worth pursuing this or not?
Well, I don't know, Brody, there's also room for some kind of work justifying the need for something.
Correct, that's true. Maybe it may still be worth pursuing.
I think it's also important to look at those multiple speed tracks.
That's what I know.
It's a very...
So for me, those are interesting. They fit into a lot of these models quite naturally.
You know, another thing, I mean, just like from example, in SRC map, the trickiest thing we had to deal with was this problem of having a reliable elastic data and stuff.
Yeah.
It's really hard to insert into the model.
Very hard.
But then actually the model can just go over it and...
But along those lines, you know, one of the simplest questions that for which we didn't have good answers was, under what conditions is SRC map going to have a worst case performance?
Okay.
What situations make it perform poorly? Because if we understand that, then we would understand its weakness much better than we understand it. So I think that's why some of these theoretical considerations really helpful. Because right now, you know, we have this kind of global understanding of SRC map. I think most sense of...
For example, on terms of word space, it would be great to know in an SRC map, not that much in what, but on latency.
Exactly.
Response,
well,
like, we have no idea what
all those issues are But ultimately, what is it that will make its energy...
performance
the worst. Yeah. So if
you have any
you model the problem and seeing replicas.
You mentioned that there's an issue with keeping the replicas in place. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, but in terms of
and how would
in terms of design
how
and implementation, how it affects the cost? Just,
or how to even do it?
I mean, we only know how it affects the cost in terms of expense. We don't have a real model.
Given the replica placement by the algorithm, what is the cost of updating each of these, keeping them updated, keeping them interesting?
Yeah,
for
example, given that we don't have, we only have a small working set compared to the school,
right.
We can have misses, and that's what it's going to high latency, and so
yes.
We can also measure.
But that's a different question. I mean, here you're.
I was giving a question.
Yeah, yeah, no, so that's what I think, that each of those questions should be separated.
Yeah.
And, once we understand each of them separately, then we can try to put all of these together and try to understand a big complicated one. But right now we want to simplify it so that each of those interesting questions can be thought about.
Question by question. This is hardly anybody simplifying.
Yeah, I guess it's a very novel cause. I don't know. I mean,
But I think that eventually those answers will help design better.
It should.
If it doesn't, then it's a useless language.
It's just that nobody takes you. Or I don't know, you get too much in depth with systems that you forget what a math of saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
I think that was a good survey.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Maybe that rabbit is worth discussing more in our life.
It's hard, yeah. I looked into the paper sometimes before, but I never.
The Robin was very long. Compared to the other papers, it was harder for me to try to organize all the information in a couple of slides. Speaking pages.
I don't know.
Do you know how to stop it from recording?
Is it even on? It's not even on. Okay, I'm going to just say no. Three cases of. Oh, no, I don't want to. It's still recording. Should I save it?
I guess, yeah.